New clues unlocking the mystery of how Edward Leed Scullin was able to create Coral Castle down in Florida all by himself, those huge blocks of stone. He did once say that he knew the secrets of how the pyramids were built. In a moment, R.L. Poole joins us. We'll talk about Coral Castle on Coast to Coast AM. Independent researcher R.L. Poole has spent the last 10 years studying one of the most important megalithic structures in history, Coral Castle. It's down in Florida. Focusing on small details, he has found clues which he believes can unlock the mystery of how a very small, demure man named Edward Leeds Scullin was able to create the Coral Castle all by himself, by the way, and it's a great story. R.L. Poole on Coast to Coast. Hello, R.L. Good to have you with us.
George, it's a pleasure to meet you and to be on this show.
This is a fascinating story. Let's go back. A lot of people probably don't know who Edward Leeds Scullin was. If you could give us a little brief description of where he was born, when he came here, and what he did.
Sure. Ed Leeds Scullin was a Latvian immigrant who had a fourth grade education, and he weighed about 100 pounds. As you said, he was a very small, very frail man. And he had tuberculosis, and he had moved to Florida for the warm weather and to help him with the symptoms associated with tuberculosis. And while he was here, he sought out a plot of land. And he had actually found what some would call the very worst acre of land in Florida. It was just nothing but bedrock with a little bit of grass growing on top. And he took that land and he turned it into something unforgettable, I think you'll agree.
He sure did. The big question was, how did he do it? Now, tell me your interest, R.L., in Edward Leeds Scullin and Coral Castle. What developed that?
Well, I have to tell you, it goes all the way back to my childhood. I saw In Search Of with Leonard Nimoy.
Uh-huh.
And, the very famous episode, my favorite episode, The Castle of Secrets. And I was really intrigued by the story of a man who was able to build something so unbelievable. And with Leonard Nimoy's narration, adding the mystery to it, and seeing that somebody here, somebody in the United States, did something megalithic and unbelievable, that just always really struck with me. And I've been interested in it ever since. About 10 years ago, I started looking into it seriously again for the first time, and I realized that no one had solved the mystery. No one was really making any headway in trying to find out the answer to what Ed knew. And so I decided to take up the challenge, and I've been pretty obsessed with it ever since.
Were you in awe with the structure?
Absolutely. I've been there three times.
That's a lot. Each time
I go, I am more and more impressed with what Ed Leeds Scullin was able to do. Because he did it with practically nothing. I think that is really the crux of the whole mystery, is he did it with almost nothing, which is impossible. You can't do it with almost nothing. People who are really, really good at stuff like this, they need huge machines. They need lots of people. They need lots of planning. They need time. And it seemed like Ed didn't need any of those things.
And did he not build it, and then he took it apart and moved it?
That's the this is the part also. You're asking me great questions, because this is the unbelievable part. He picks it up, he builds it in one place, and he picks it up, and he moves it about 30 miles to Homestead, where it now sits. In fact, it's the Coral Castle is made of two different types of coral, because where he built it at the first place, it was comprised primarily of oolite limestone. Well, when he gets down to Homestead, it's solid bedrock coral. So when you walk through the castle, you can actually, once you get the hang of it, you can walk around and see which part was made at the old place and which part was made at the new place. But yes, he was able to pick up and move this whole thing in 2 weeks.
I had heard at RL that he had a truck driver show up with a flatbed truck, And he told him, okay, go away for a couple hours. And he said, what? He said, go away for a couple hours. It'll be loaded. And he loaded it somehow himself. And the truck driver was just baffled when he came back.
Yeah, there seems to be, there's that general story is out there. I've heard overnight. I've heard he walked around the corner and it was done. I've heard a couple of hours. So I think that the jury's still really out on exactly the time frame. But you have to, whatever it was, even if it was overnight, the man was able to load a truck up by himself overnight. Why would he not want someone to watch him? How was he doing it so fast?
How big were the stones?
Some of the stones that he brought down weighed 10 tons.
10 tons!
And he weighs 100 pounds.
I could barely lift 100 pounds of some kind of fertilizer bag or something. 10 tons!
Yeah, I'm going to have to be saving somebody's life if I'm picking up and moving 100 pounds or more.
Jeez.
That's where I'm at in my life.
Now, was there not a story of a couple kids that kind of peeked over at night and saw him working or doing something?
Yeah, this was a very interesting part of the Castle of Secrets. I remember this part because it involved children, and I was a child at the time. Well, people would try to spy on him and figure out how he was working, and he would just stop. And it was almost like he had a sixth sense that he could tell when people were around, when he was being watched. Well, one time some children reportedly had kind of snuck up and was watching him, and they said that he was singing to the stones and that they were floating around like hydrogen.
Oh, I love it. Sound and resonance.
That just fascinated me because, and I didn't realize as a child, but it's just like you said, I believe there's some kind of resonance there. That maybe he wasn't singing, maybe there was a frequency being emitted that sounded like singing or humming. Or maybe he really was singing to the stones and it was amplifying some type of resonant effect.
He once said that he knew the secrets of the pyramids, and he also wrote a book on magnetics claiming that every object could be magnetized, not just metal. I find both of those statements, RL, to be fascinating.
So do I, and I think that it's world-changing. You know, when you think about how the pyramids were built, they were built with celestial alignments in mind. That was the goal. As we get into this, you will see, and I believe that I've conclusively proven, that Ed's castle is dedicated to celestial alignment. That's not a coincidence.
No, I think you're right. Now, he's got one structure there that is called the Polaris Telescope. It's, how tall is it with a big hole in it?
It's about 30 feet tall.
Oh, my God. And he was 5 feet tall.
And he's 5 feet, and this thing has to weigh every ounce of 28 tons.
And it stands straight up, right?
And it's perfect.
Unbelievable.
So here's the interesting thing. It's called the Polaris Telescope. It's not a telescope. It actually doesn't fit that description. It fits the description of a sextant. And what a sextant does is it marks the position of a star in the sky.
That I think, is why it's positioned where it is and has that hole up there.
Right. So it has the hole and it has the wires, crosshairs in it, and you can look through the bottom part that he has on the ground. That it's another hole in a rock with a crosshair, and you look through that up through the quote-unquote telescope, and you can see Polaris on any clear night of the year. To me, what's interesting is he went to a lot of trouble to do this. And the reason is because he was trying to prove something. I believe he was trying to show that he understood something a little bit differently than everyone else, and that is astronomy. You see, he didn't mark Polaris. He marked exact true north. Because Polaris isn't completely north. It's off by about 2 degrees of true north, so technically it's also a circumpolar star. Well, if you look through the Polaris telescope, you can see in every season that Polaris is in a different quadrant of the crosshairs. So what he's showing is that our axis never shifts. It never changes, because if it did, we wouldn't be able to see Polaris through the telescope every day of the year.
Would something shine through that hole either at night, or the sun would cast a shadow through it, or something? Was there a clue to it?
Well, for me, and I wanted to get into this a little bit later, but his moon dial, I mean sundial, I believe is a moon dial. I believe that the Polaris telescope wasn't just for looking out of, it was for something to shine through, just like you described. It's almost like bullseye. When he writes his book, he tells you he calculates his latitude and longitude. And I believe that the angle coming through the Polaris telescope and the spot that it shines on is the exact spot he's describing when he gives his geoposition.
If you were to look through the hole at a certain time, if you got it right, what would you see?
Well, what you would see, I think, is in his writing, he says, scientists should come and look at the red dwarf, the telescope, and the sundial, and see how they would change science. So I took him at his word, and I went and studied it. And what I realized is that he's showing that the Earth moves on an angular orbit to the sun, not in a flat stereo orbit.
Right.
That the Earth orbits at an angle of 23.5 degrees because our axis never changes. So if our axis never changes, that means our relative position to the sun stays the same. We just move at an angle to the sun. That's the only way it could work. And so he shows his sundial, how it tells time differently because it's an analematic sundial and it's on a curved surface. And this is showing that he understands the true path the Earth takes around the sun. The Polaris telescope proves that the axis never changes, that there is no axial obliquity, as it's called, as our seasons change, that the axis points towards something else in space. It doesn't happen that way. And, of course, the red door, where it shows the sun and it shows the Earth on an angular orbit, 21 down here, 21 up at the upper left-hand corner. He's showing the Earth on an angular orbit to the sun. The Polaris telescope proves it, and the sundial confirms it. He put all those three things together just to teach that one lesson, and it had to do with celestial alignment,
yeah,
where we are in space.
And a message somewhere. Did he have a house there? Was there a house there?
A house?
Yeah, on Coral Castle, someplace where
he had a small little, I think I've heard it referred to very accurately as Spartan conditions.
Uh-huh. Still made with the same stone?
That was actually made out of the stone from the old place.
That he moved.
That was actually, he already had that built when he had moved the place down to Homestead.
Okay.
He had a room up top, and I mean a room, and not a very generous one, and then below that was his workshop where he kept all his tools. It was approximately the same size. Here's something interesting about Ed's room, is that in the ceiling of that room,
mm-hmm,
there's another hole and another crosshair in the ceiling of Ed's room in the Coral Castle.
Yeah, he was placing these for some purpose. There was something going on.
Yes, these are bullseye markers.
Exactly.
And I have to say, I loved what you said on Ancient Aliens, Unexplained Structures, of course, my favorite episode, where you said that somehow this was easy, that he just probably pushed these into place.
Yes.
I honestly believe that that is correct. I believe that he built the pyramids, like how the pyramids were built. He built the Coral Castle, how Pumapunku was built, Markowasse, Sacsayhuaman, how these unbelievable megalithic structures were all made. He made it the same way. And just like them, he passed the secret down in the form of clues for future generations to figure out.
Why did he build the Coral Castle? Was it for that girl he wanted, that Agnes that he so desperately wanted as a girlfriend?
I'm going to tell you right now, I do not believe that he was building it for her.
Okay.
He wasn't waiting for some lost love. In fact, this is one of the discoveries that this is a discovery I wanted to put out live on your program for the very first time. No one's heard this.
Here we go.
But I've figured out what Ed's Sweet 16 is.
What do you think?
Ed's Sweet 16 are the 16 alignments that he's carved into the east wall of the Coral Castle, what I call the Constellation Wall.
Aha.
He shows 16 different celestial alignments. You see, on that episode In Search Of, The Castle of Secrets, they had a lady speaking who was describing the tour that Ed would give. And she said something very specific that I'll never forget. She said that he would look up in the sky and his voice would get very ethereal. And he would say, one day, my sweet 16 will come. He would look up in the sky and say, one day, my sweet 16 will come. He was talking about the 16 alignments that have to happen simultaneously for him to be able to accomplish his work.
And would we know astronomically when that would occur?
Yeah, I have an idea.
They must have software that would do that for you. You know what?
Actually, it's so easy. I used Google Sky Map.
And you just put it together that way.
Yeah, and so what I did was once I figured out that the east wall was constellations and stars and planets and alignment.
That was your template, wasn't it?
That was my template, and so what I had to do is I just... SkyMap has this great little feature where you can travel through time, and you can see celestial alignments as far back pretty much as you want to go. And so my job was to sift through the millions of possible combinations until I got to the right one, and I actually figured out the day, the year, the month, the time, everything. It's September 10th, 1923, at 7 p.m., 8 minutes and 23 seconds Eastern Daylight Time, which was the exact time of a full solar eclipse.
Wow. Now, will it happen again?
That is a very good question, and I am not sure of that yet. Again, I have to sift through and look for that alignment, which is very specific, because when you're looking for one alignment, not so tough. Two, not so tough. Five starts to get difficult. 16 is a nightmare.
What happened to him, R.L.? Did he just die out there or what?
Well, according to Rusty McClure's book, Coral Castle, The American Stonehenge, by the way, my favorite biography of Ed, he conclusively proved that Ed died from a kidney infection. Now, here's something interesting. He died when he was 64 years old.
Young age.
It is. It's also 16 plus 16 plus 16 plus 16.
Uh-huh.
Homestead, Florida. 16 letters.
That's weird.
There's 16 steps going up to his room. There's 16 alignments on this floor. 16.
And you do not have a website, right?
No, I don't. I do have a YouTube channel.
Oh, how do people find it?
Oh, simply go on to it's YouTube .com/user/talkingtoLeedSkullman.
Oh, okay. And you got to Google that, folks, to get the spelling of Lead Skullman correct. We're going to come back more with R.L. Poole as we talk about his work into the Coral Castle. An amazing story of how a 100-pound man was able to move tonnage of blocks. We have linked up R.L. Poole's YouTube channel to his name at coasttocoastam.com so you can look at some of his work as we talk about breakthroughs in understanding Coral Castle and Edward Leeds Skullman. It's an amazing story. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. R.L. Poole with us. R.L., some people say that Lead Skolnin left behind some tools, some artifacts, a huge tripod, which they thought he used to lift the blocks. I'm not so sure he did that. In some kind of broken magnetic-type device or something like that. Do you know anything about that?
Well, I do know a few things about it. One is there are pictures of him using tripods and seemingly using them to lift blocks. That's what he has shown in the photographs. Once you get to know Ed a little bit, you see how he thinks. And what he likes to do is he likes to fool you right in front of your face.
Like a magician.
Like a magician, exactly. And he's very good at it. I've often told people that if Ed were alive today, he would be a big fan of the Riddler. Because that's who he is. He is the Riddler. And I have been trying to figure this out for a long time. When I look at the pictures, it doesn't make any sense to me.
No, of course not.
To me, when people say that Ed did this with a tripod and a hoist and pulleys, it doesn't make any sense.
And it's a wooden tripod, isn't it?
I'm sorry?
It's a wooden tripod, isn't it?
Yeah, it's Florida pine. We're told to believe that Ed did it in some way that's completely prosaic and explainable, that he can get 3 pine trees to hold 28 tons.
Yeah.
First of all, that's ridiculous.
And how do you move the block over to the tripod, or do you take the tripod to the block, but still, it makes no sense.
Yeah, once you lift it, how do you move it?
And where do you put it?
So in one of the photographs, it shows him with the tripod, and he's standing there, and there's a square hole cutting in the coral bedrock, and the block is already laying off to the side. See, he's showing you that this isn't, you can't make 5-ton chains lift 6 times past their limit. You can't make 3 pine trees hold 28 tons. You can't get a sheet metal box on top of the tripod to hold the pressures of the tripod and the 28-ton block and the hoist and keep that tripod together. There's no way. If you were going to do that, that's a suicidal setup.
Absolutely. Now, he had a little black box, R.L., on the top of the tripod. What was that?
Some people have speculated that that's how he held the top of the tripod together. They say it's a wooden box. I have looked at it under close magnification, and it looks like a box made out of sheet metal to me. It's very thin. I have a suspicion that and I'm going to do the calculations on this, but I'm pretty sure that that box is just about the exact size, width, and length of the perpetual motion holder that Ed had invented. And I believe he may have had a perpetual motion holder up inside the box on top of the tripod. In fact, that might have been what he needed the tripod for in the first place, was if this perpetual motion holder was responsible for emanating or resonating radio waves when current passed through it, that you'd want it above the coral, resonating down onto it. And that might have been what he needed the tripod for in the first place, and the stones, he didn't need it for them at all.
Probably one of the greatest mysteries ever. Now, you have some kind of discovery as well with the secret schematic. Tell us about that. Was that the alignment?
No, this has to do with the perpetual motion holder. On his book, Magnetic Current, he has those two little lines on the cover of the book.
Okay.
And there's another one called Animal, Vegetable, and Mineral Life, where he has a hand-drawn sketch of the perpetual motion holder. One year, I was over Christmas holiday, I was watching Iron Man. Now, bear with me. I'm going somewhere here.
Okay.
And I had the books with me while I was obsessed over Ed's writings, and I carried his books everywhere. I always had them near me. I'm watching Iron Man, and I'm watching him in the movie. He's showing his partner how he's hiding this schematic of the Iron Man suit, and he's got it on different parts of the design on different pieces of paper. And when he overlaps all the pieces of paper and you look at it through the light, you see the whole Mark I armor. And I'm looking at the TV, and I'm looking at the booklets, and I'm looking at the TV, and I'm looking, and all of a sudden, oh no, I picked up the booklets, and I overlapped the covers, held them up to the light, and it creates a completely different diagram. Those two little lines that are on the book cover of Magnetic Current, when you overlap it with the other booklet, creates a schematic, a diagram that matches up perfectly with the other drawing.
That's dramatic all by itself.
No one has seen this for decades. And I have to say, when I first saw it, when I'm standing there at the window and I'm looking through the covers and I see this diagram, it hit me. Ed left that for me to find. He didn't know it, and I didn't know it.
Huh.
But at that time that I was looking through the window, the only two people who knew that diagram was there was me and Ed.
Would you have liked to have met him, RL?
Oh, I would love to have sat down with Ed. I don't know that I would have been his kind of guy, but I would have loved to have just sat and just spent some time and just got to know who he was as a person. I think he was a very tough person. He was very tough on himself. I think that contributed to his death because he didn't seem to take very good care of himself, did he?
No, he did not. How do you think he learned? Let's assume he was able to move these blocks with sound resonance or magnetics or something like that. How did he learn this? Where did he learn it?
It's my opinion that Ed was a genius of observation. I believe that he had the ability to notice things that other people did not. That he, the way that the Egyptians, that other places have put clues into their megalithic structures, I believe that he was able to take them apart, like I'm trying to take the Coral Castle apart, and that he was able to observe something that we were not. And that he had this theory about how it was done, and he did experiments, and I think that he did it very scientifically, but it was all based on his own internal observations. I don't think anyone taught him this. I think it was something that he was able to deduce through deductive reasoning from what has been left to us before.
Now, currently, a family owns it. Are they still using it as a tour guide place?
Yes, it's called the Coral Castle Museum right now, and it is open almost every day, and tours are available. The last time I went there, the place, the grounds were absolutely immaculate, and the staff was very friendly and helpful. The one part that I would walk around, and I went ahead and had them give me the tour because I wanted to hear all of the folklore that was associated with the Coral Castle.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very interesting to hear. And it's also extremely misleading. Once you start, you realize that Ed has pulled the wool over everyone's eyes. And that...
He had to have, because... Nobody knows how this was done.
But I believe he was fair. And I believe that he... So here's what happened was when I found the secret schematic, I realized right then, Ed is the Riddler. He has left clue after clue after clue. And I realized that if I'm going to investigate, I have to assume everything I've been told is wrong or a lie about the Coral Castle.
And were these clues obvious or hidden?
They are available to the discerning eye.
Do you have to know what you're looking for?
Well, I didn't at first, but and that's what was so important to me about the secret schematic, was that not only was that discovery important, but it gave me so much insight into who Ed Lead Skullin was that I could kind of put that lens over my eye and start critically looking. at the Coral Castle. And for me, he puts the very first clue at the admission sign. He wastes zero time giving you clues.
And tell us about the clue.
Sure. When you look at the admission sign, as you go in, it's a five-pointed star, and it says admission 10 cents, and it has that kind of weird cent.
10 cents. How cool.
And then it says drop below. If you look underneath that in the unfinished coral, in the little, just below the little pipe where he receives your 10 cent admission, there is a word scrawled in the coral that you can see in the oblique lighting of the early morning sun. And that word is spica.
Spica?
Spica.
What does that mean?
S-P-I-C-A. And I saw it one morning when I was visiting Ed's place. And I'm like, I took a picture of it because I said, I think that's a word, is it? And it took, and so as I'm standing there looking at it, I realized it's about 9 in the morning and the sun's hitting it just right.
That's a star, like, isn't it?
Spica is, yes, and I had to look it up. I didn't realize that. So he's got a five-pointed star as the admission sign. It says drop below, and then below that it says spica. So I didn't know what that meant, so I looked up Spica, and I found out that it's the brightest star in the constellation of Virgo.
And one of the brightest in the night sky.
Absolutely. And then I found out, here's the clincher, I found out the old-timers' reference for how you find Spica in the night sky. It says that you drop below Polaris, follow the arc of Arcturus, and you will arrive at Spica. That's how you remember how to find it in the night sky. Drop below.
So he put all these little clues everywhere.
The entire place is a puzzle. I have figured out maybe a tenth of what's there. But now we know it's there. That's the important part. And once you start looking through that lens at the Coral Castle, I believe it's only a matter of time before this gets solved.
If you had that audience with him, what would you be asking him? Because he probably wouldn't come out freely and say, this is how I move these blocks, RL. I don't think he'd tell you that.
No. I'm not sure what I would ask. I guess I would ask him why it was so important for him to be the one to build the castle. And why he didn't want anyone else to help.
And why did he move it?
Yeah, that's a mystery, too. You have to, when you look at the geography, though.
Was he bullied or something?
Well, there was a story that he was, that a group of guys had robbed, or came to rob him, or they wanted the secret, and they had, unfortunately, beat him unmercifully.
Oh, God. And he's only 100 pounds. They could have killed him.
He's this little guy. He's an immigrant. He doesn't bother anybody. He's always been said to be as gentle as a lamb. And
so maybe he just figured enough of this area, I'm leaving.
Right. Now, I'm also not sure that that isn't a cover story. Because if you look at where he put the Coral Castle, it is right on one point of the Bermuda Triangle.
Like a ley line or something.
Like, it's directly on a ley line. It's also as close as you can get to the Tropic of Cancer. And the Tropic of Cancer, when you follow that line around the world, you get the Bermuda Triangle, you get the Dragon's Triangle, you get the Zone of Silence, you get all of these kind of really weird places are all along the Tropic of Cancer. And he moved his Coral Castle closer to it. And I think that he might have moved it there because it just simply made the work easier to do once the alignments were in place.
Seems like he was just one heck of a lonely, amazing person, RL, doesn't it?
Yeah, there's always a sadness about him, though, wasn't there?
Yes.
A loneliness, a sadness. I feel like he saw the world a certain way that no one else did. Or could appreciate at the time.
Was he prophetic at all? Did he say anything that we should know about for the future?
I believe that he, in his written works, was able to give us a unified field theory of physics. He talks about, some of the greatest minds in the world, even Stephen Hawking, readily admits that...
Oh, you still there? Weird. Well, we'll try to get him back, too. This is a strange, strange night. Huh. Okay, but we're talking with R.L. Poole. He doesn't have a website. He's got his YouTube channel that we have linked up for you. He's just a researcher. He's working on a book about Coral Castle, but it's not here yet. So he's one of those rare individuals who just loves the subject matter and the topic at hand. And here he goes. There you go there, R.L. You're back with us.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Do you know what happened?
No, I don't. It just dropped.
Okay, well, we're glad you're back. I've got a little feedback.
Would you like me to pick up where I was?
Yeah.
Okay. So even Stephen Hawking admits they don't understand gravity or its principal role in the universe. Ed explains this very clearly, that gravity is magnetism. Gravity is an expression of magnetism. Electricity is an expression of magnetism. Life is an expression of magnetism. It's all magnet. We live in a magnetic universe. And this is the common bond that should do away with quantum mechanics and relativity as separate entities. That magnetism explains it all.
Well, the great thing that he was able to do was he was able to talk about magnetism in that booklet, that little book he wrote. I have one of those back in St. Louis. And he is convinced that every object can be magnetized. What do you think of that?
Well, and this is what I say is so brilliant about him, because he realizes that everything is magnetic. If it has gravity, if you want to call it gravity, okay? Let's say an apple has slightly less gravity than, say, a person, right? But we can react to things the same. We are both held to this planet. If you throw us up, we fall down. We're subject to the same laws. So if all those other things are the same, then we can be treated the same. Everything can be moved or levitated or changed, because the thing that holds it together, he says it's cosmic force, that it is what holds together the earth and everything on it. So that means that we are all made of the same stuff in the same way, which means that as it applies to magnetism, there kind of aren't any rules.
R.L., what does your gut tell you in terms of how he might have built this and moved those stones?
If I could just sum up my theory, I believe that he was able to use magnetism combined with charged water and a radio frequency to break the magnetic bond between coral and water. He would pour water over the coral and saturate it, expose it to this frequency, and it would cause the magnetic bond between the water and the coral to break, and then they would bond, and the coral and clay would become one substance. It would be like clay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you break the magnetic bond between the water and the coral, you also break its magnetic bond to the earth simultaneously, which would make the coral neutrally buoyant. Not levitate, but neutrally buoyant.
Okay, you stay with us. We're going to come back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM and take phone calls with you as we talk about Coral Castle.